Professional wrestling, like real life, is full of surprises. Hi, everyone. It's Freddie Prinze Jr. And it's no surprise I can talk wrestling all day, any day. Kind of like how State Farm agents can talk insurance and help you choose the right coverage. When it comes to important insurance decisions, let State Farm support you with the coverage you need backed with 24/7 support. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Being a chef means keeping your cool in the kitchen. And with Resi Priority Notify and Global Dining Access through my Amex Platinum card,
right this way,
it's nice to try someone else's food for a change. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
Experts claim there is nothing tougher than a diamond. But at Diamonds Direct, we beg to differ. Have you ever met a mother? Strong, radiant, timeless. This Mother's Day, give her the gift that meets her match. With diamond jewelry starting at $200, plus Diamonds Direct's exceptional quality and unbeatable everyday price, you're sure to give her a gift that wows this generation and the next to come. Experience the thrill of jewelry shopping done right at Diamonds Direct. Diamonds Direct. Your love, our passion.
Locatora Radio is a radiophonic novela,
which is just a very extra way of saying
a podcast.
I'm Dios FM.
And I am Mala Muñoz.
Locatora Radio is your prima's favorite podcast, hosted by us, Mala and Diosa.
We're two IG friends turned podcast partners, breaking down pop culture, feminism, sexual wellness, and offering fresh takes on trending topics through nuanced interviews with up-and-coming Latinx creatives.
Known as Las Locatoras, Las Mamis of Myth and Bullshit, and Las Podcasteras Peligrosas, we were podcasting independently since 2016, but joined iHeartMedia's My Cultura Network in 2022.
This year, we're continuing to share stories from the Latinx community para todo el mundo.
Welcome to Season 8.
Are you listening?
Hola, hola, locamores. Welcome to Season 8 of Locatora Radio. I'm Diosa.
And I am Mala.
You're tuning in to Capítulo 166.
Over the years, we have created segments and series to diversify the type of episodes that we produce over here at Locatora Radio.
Like Latinas in politics, loca epistemologies, goddess worship, femme defense, etc., etc.
This season, we're bringing you a brand new series called Me, My Mental Health, and I.
So far, we've interviewed actress and mental health advocate Dani Fernandez and licensed therapist Adriana Alejandre.
This is our third episode of this mini-series, and we're talking about our favorite girl, the sad girl.
We are lifelong sad girls. We have a lot of feelings. We feel a lot. We think a lot. We obviously talk a lot.
I've been a sad girl on AIM, on MySpace, on Tumblr, on Twitter especially.
Oh, the Tumblr sad girl was like my truest form. But there's also something about Twitter pre-Elon that lent itself to sad girl convos.
Oh, and we're not alone in that. I've seen so many tweets about hot girl walks and searching for that serotonin boost. And as a fellow sad girl, something that I do is smoke weed, roller skate, and take in as much cinema and comedy as I can, especially if I can weep beautifully in a dark theater.
I used to tweet about my sad girl days also, and then I started running, and now I'm a sad girl that's literally running after endorphins.
And personally, I love a sad girl meme, like the one with the little girl sitting in her car seat and she has glitter smeared all over her face, but she just looks like inspired but tragic.
That one is so, so good. I think one of my favorites is that meme of that little penguin that's aggressively putting glitter on a card. Like, I always feel that way when I have to do like really anything self-care related, like the real shit, right? Not like the face mask, not like the runs, but like the deep shit where you have to talk in therapy, you got a journal, and it's like, all right, I guess I'll do this for my silly little brain. Why not?
Totally. And again, it's not just us. A lot of Latinas are sad girls. I mean, there's just a lot of feeling, a lot of emotion in our cultures. Whether it be music like mariachi or bolero, there's this sad girl element to all of it. Everyone is just sobbing on the inside. And a lot of Señora jams are also sad girl songs. I mean, Give Us Anything by Rocío Dúrcal. I mean, devastating.
Yeah. El Gato Bajo La Lluvia, like, let me just weep to that. Weep to that beautifully, as you said. Like, I will cry a good cry to that song. And also, I feel like telenovelas are so hyperbolic that they're, like, sad girl adjacent. You're going to cry to your favorite telenovela without a doubt.
They're crying on screen. We're crying at home. Everyone is in tears. And that's how we like it. There are so many examples. And being online has led to a lot of information sharing about self-care, mental health, and community care.
This is obviously incredible, necessary. We love it. We do it, too. But there's also so much misinformation out there.
Yeah, like one time I saw this tweet where someone claimed that if you read a lot as a child, then you were dissociating.
I mean, maybe, but like not everybody, right?
Right. I don't think so. And I think most licensed therapists would agree with us. And that's part of the problem. So much is shared online, and we're grateful for that, that the digital space has provided a public forum for people to contribute their ideas with the world. But we also want our listeners who are consumers of content to be mindful of the mental health content that they do consume and make sure that it is healthy.
So today we're talking to two licensed social workers, Miriam Juarez and Sasha Robles, creators of Homegirl Consejos. This new project aims to create space for homegirls to unpack the bullshit and exchange consejos.
Like us, Sasha and Miriam have been very online, so we want to talk to them about sad girl culture and the internet. Yes, we have Sasha and Miriam here in studio from Homegirl Consejos. Can you two please say hello to our audience and introduce yourselves?
Hi, I'm Sasha.
And I'm Miriam.
And we make the halves of Homegirl Consejos. We're both licensed clinical social workers that created Homegirl Consejos out of just our experiences as homegirls and just kind of wanting to build community within the Latino kind of space.
Yeah, and I think something that means a lot to us is that we were both really raised by women in our family. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think part of the consejos is that we've always received just a lot of advice from the women, and I think that's something that we both respect a lot. So we really wanted to create a space where it's not so clinical, it doesn't feel like a therapy room. We do recognize that sometimes therapy is not always accessible as we mm-hmm. want it to be. You know, we talk about how mental health is important, but we really wanted to create something that we can bring to the community, and it's not as scary, given that mental health is a very taboo subject within our communities.
I love that. And I just want to get right into it because I love one of your taglines, comunidad para chionas, chingonas, and everything in between. And you're talking about bringing your work into the community. And I know that y'all have been doing pop-ups and doing workshops with Belladonna, our friends over there. And so I just want to ask you about like bringing that into the community and what that's been like for you.
Yeah. I feel like it's been very like validating in with kind of creating this, because obviously it came from like the inception of an idea of like we want to build something, like Miriam said, like that is very kind of, you know, focused on feeling accessible. So then when we were approached by Lala to kind of do these workshops and like having people actually come out, we saw like there is that need, right? Especially within like women and mujeres, right? Where there is kind of like this feeling of wanting to know mental health but not knowing where to start, and having it be less scary in that environment of it being an open space and open dialogue.
Yeah, and I think we met Lala when we were back in grad school, mm-hmm. and we kind of kept in touch a little bit. And I remember when she had, well, she's had her space, right? But she kind of shared that she wanted to kind of open it up to the community. And the thing about Bella Doña and Lala is that, like, it's really about, like, homegirls putting on homegirls that I think Homegirl Consejos, like, really stands behind, too. Because when Sasha and I met in grad school, like, we met, and for a whole year, we did not really talk. Like, we literally sat right in front of each other, and, like, we just looked at each other whenever we had to roll our eyes at someone. But it was, like, we knew, right? And so after we vetted each other for a year, like, that's really when we started connecting. And I think that solidified our friendship because, like, we were about the same thing. And I think both going to USC, like, you either get that or you don't in your classes, you know? Like, you really have to find your community. So when we started working with Lala, I think that really helped us, like, find just other girls and women who wanted to do the work on themselves and, like, build with community, which I think it's been really helpful.
Now, we found you guys online on Instagram. That's, I think, where we stumbled across Homegirl Consejos. Do you find that a lot of sad girls are very, very, very much online in your experience?
Totally. Yeah. I think we were, like, talking a little bit about that and how, like, it's like a double-edged sword because I think the online community and the internet is definitely a place where sad girls go to find community, find validation, sometimes that we don't always get outside. But then at the same time, it could be where we, like, over identify with a lot of stuff that's online, which could be good and bad, right? I think it's really about what we do after that, but it's definitely something that is there. And I think that's why, you know, there's a lot of girls that kind of can relate to what we're talking about, you know, because a lot of us have lived it, different experiences, but we've lived it.
As an actor, a producer, and a proud Latino father, my days can get very busy, which is why I make sure to dedicate time to what's important, like supporting my community through my work, sharing my Colombian and Venezuelan culture, and being present for my family, which is everything to me. Hey everyone, it's Wilmer Valderrama, and we're reflecting on what matters most. I start by giving thanks for good support in my life whenever I need to make the big decisions. How about you? If it's insurance you need, State Farm is there to help you choose the right coverage for you. And State Farm offers great support 24/7. Just call an agent. State Farm is also a big supporter of My Cultura podcast network by helping to share our Latinx voices. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Listen to new episodes of your favorite My Cultura shows wherever you get your podcasts.
There's no distance too far for the perfect trip.
Hi, checking in for...
Or the perfect table.
Hey, where are you?
Coming!
And when you get access to Resi Priority Notify with your Amex Platinum card...
Hey, this looks amazing!
I'm so glad you made it.
And travel benefits at fine hotels and resorts booked through Amex Travel. It's worth the trip. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
Live Nation presents Concert Week. Now through May 14th, get $25 tickets to over 5,000 shows. That's up to 75% off a summer full of your favorite artists, like 21 Savage, Alanis Morissette, Cage the Elephant, Celeste Barber, Dierks Bentley, Fade, Hootie and the Blowfish, Janet Jackson, Kidz Bop Kids, Meghan Trainor, Pitbull, Puma, Sarah McLachlan. Get tickets to more than 5,000 summer shows for just $25. Until now through May 14th. Visit LiveNation.com/Concert Week to learn more and plan your summer with Sean Paul, Sum 41, 30 Seconds to Mars, and Two Door Cinema Club.
Can you tell me more about this over-identifying with the sad girl?
Yeah.
I feel like there's so much that kind of goes into it because I feel like sad girl, it's like the sad girl aesthetic, the sad girl lifestyle, right? Where it's like, I feel like now because of like social media, but then also like the more kind of opening of like mental health and those discussions of mental health, I feel like a lot of people are learning dialogue and just kind of like sometimes like applying that to themselves, right? Where they think, oh yeah, that's me, right? And so they like overly like identify with it where they say, hey, yeah, that's how I feel when I kind of go through things, right? Or like that is that sad girl kind of feeling that I get. So I feel like sometimes it, like Miriam said, it's like that double-edged sword where sometimes we can kind of become enveloped in that.
Well, you know, I think it's not necessarily a bad thing because I think having it being part of your identity is like a way of really like taking ownership of that, you know? And I think that's something that like we don't always have that power where you know, and something we were talking about is like being called like lazy or like, you know, where like no haces nada, you know? Like, I remember summer breaks when I was in school, like, and running at 3 o'clock because my mom's getting home from work. And I got to do something.
And show anything.
To show my worth for the day, you know? Yeah. And so definitely that validation and identification with the sad girl, it brings power to you, right? Because it's not like something is wrong with you. Like, these are my experiences. But I think where I see that is like, now what, right? Mm-hmm. Like, what do I do with it? Like, it's good to have that community, and I think it's necessary, but then it's taking accountability as well. Yeah. And it's not to say that it's all on us, because there's definitely a lot of factors at play, but then just, when do I take accountability for it?
Yeah. You know, balance.
To bring a change for me.
Yeah, it's like, am I Eeyore and I'm just sad forever? Like, I'm mopey.
Yeah.
Or am I Elle Woods after her breakup and I go to Harvard?
Yeah,
exactly.
What do I do with my sadness?
Yeah. And I think it's also like the definite, like, what definitions you want to attribute to like sad girl? Because I feel like there's a lot of versions of the sad girl aesthetic, right? There's like the white version,
the
of
Lana
sad
Del Rey aesthetic.
Exactly.
Because if you like Google
cigarettes, cigarettes, black coffee, glitter.
Exactly. Yeah. But it's like, when I think about like when I was introduced to sad girl aesthetic, I'm thinking like, mi vida loca sad girl, you know? So I'm just like, what is this other version of sad girl, right? Because my version of sad girl is a woman who has had hardships, right? Mm. Who has had these lived experiences. And kind of because of those hardships, obviously it shapes their perspective and shapes kind of like how they walk within their world. While versus like the Lana Del Rey, like sad girl is more kind of like what you were sharing, right? Mm-hmm. So it's like really just defining what that means for you and having it be okay. Is this an act of resistance of me acknowledging, hey, this is, you know, me acknowledging my mental health, me acknowledging, right, like my experience and how that's affecting me? Or is this like, now I'm just kind of going for the aesthetic of like, I just want to be sad.
Mm-hmm. The manic pixie girl.
Manic pixie girl. Yes, exactly. Like, what is it? Like Girl Interrupted.
Right.
That type of a thing.
Right.
Where it's like, it's really kind of depending on where you kind of want to kind of put that definition.
I'm wondering, in your experiences and doing workshops and connecting with other women, why are sad girls so sad?
You know,
what is making us sad?
I think like one thing that's so important is that like it's not new, right? Mm-hmm, like when I think of sad girls, like I also like think back to like I have a prima who's older than me who has always like been known as sad girl, you know, like that's just been her name. And I just thought it was something like I never thought twice about it, right? Then you have like that Tumblr era of sad girls that I think is super important to like the internet and
our
what
formation.
We see now. Exactly. Yeah. You know, that I think it's definitely a way to kind of like find support and find community because, yeah, a lot of like the conversations that can happen in our like communities are not necessarily like geared to make us feel like supported or to make us or to hold space for what our experiences are.
Yeah.
Because the reality is that maybe our experiences like aren't as bad as like our parents, right? Whatever that means. But I think it's different. It's like about perspective. So we might not always get that support and validation from like our communities and families the way that we need it. So I think that is one of the biggest reasons that I think the internet has like come in and like supported us, you know? Yeah. So even if it's an over identification, I think there's definitely like a lot of pros to that as to like finding community and being able to like relate, right? Because I think we were sad girls in part in grad school and like that's something that connected us, right? So I don't think that like you're ever not a sad girl, but there's waves and, you know, life is life.
Yeah, I think most of our grandmas probably display strong sad girl proclivities.
For sure they did.
They love to be sad. Mm-hmm. They love to, like, my grandma loves to talk about, like, her deepest trauma, like,
tragic
over
things.
Breakfast.
Right? Yeah. Like, it just kind of comes out the fly, like, drinking coffee.
Yes. Like, casually.
Yes.
I know.
Because they've never been to therapy.
Exactly.
So they just, like, se les sale como si nada.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
totally. I wanted to ask you, because you mentioned this in particular, and I wanted to bust some common myths that we maybe have heard in our families, have been told to us. I know that growing up, like, my dad always used to tell me, like, you're too young to be tired. You're too young to be sad. Mm-hmm. And that definitely was not how I was feeling at, like, 16, 15, even younger. Like, no, I was sad, or no, I was tired, because your little body is experiencing so much, right? But it wasn't allowed or appropriate to be sad, to be tired, to lay in bed. So I wanted to ask both of you, you know, like, how can we, like, bust that myth that, like, you're too young to experience some type of feeling?
Yeah.
As an actor, a producer, and a proud Latino father, my days can get very busy, which is why I make sure to dedicate time to what's important, like supporting my community through my work, sharing my Colombian and Venezuelan culture, and being present for my family, which is everything to me. Hey everyone, it's Wilmer Valderrama, and we're reflecting on what matters most. I start by giving thanks for good support in my life whenever I need to make the big decisions. How about you? If it's insurance you need, State Farm is there to help you choose the right coverage for you. And State Farm offers great support 24/7. Just call an agent. State Farm is also a big supporter of My Cultura podcast network by helping to share our Latinx voices. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Listen to new episodes of your favorite My Cultura shows wherever you get your podcasts.
There's no distance too far for the perfect trip.
Hi, checking in for...
Or the perfect table.
Hey, where are you?
Coming!
And when you get access to Resi Priority Notify with your Amex Platinum card...
Hey, this looks amazing!
I'm so glad you made it.
And travel benefits at fine hotels and resorts booked through Amex Travel. It's worth the trip. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
Live Nation presents Concert Week. Now through May 14th, get $25 tickets to over 5,000 shows. That's up to 75% off a summer full of your favorite artists like 21 Savage, Alanis Morissette, Cage the Elephant, Celeste Barber, Dierks Bentley, Fade, Hootie and the Blowfish, Janet Jackson, Kidz Bop Kids, Meghan Trainor, Bizzle Pluma, Sarah McLachlan. Get tickets to more than 5,000 summer shows for just $25. Until now through May 14th. Visit LiveNation.com/Concert Week to learn more and plan your summer with Sean Paul, Sum 41, 30 Seconds to Mars, oh, and Two Door Cinema Club.
I feel like we definitely had to deal a lot of this with, like, family members that we were dealing with clients, where parents just couldn't understand. Like, they have food, right? They have a house over their head. Like, they have a family. Like, why are they sad? When it's like, it goes deeper than that, right? And I think, again, it kind of goes back to that survival thing that Miriam was sharing. Like, a lot of the times our families, our parents are living in that survival space because they're doing what they need to do in order to kind of, like, survive and thrive, right, in our society right now with everything kind of going on. So it's like, it's hard sometimes for them to kind of put those two and two together, that your child or your sibling or whoever that is, they have emotions, they have, right, like, they have feelings. So these things are going to affect them, right? And I think it's really hard to kind of dispel in, like, our community sometimes, because, like, mental health is not always accepted as being real, right? Where it's like, that's not a real thing, right? You either get up, you do your thing, that's going to help you feel better, right? Ya levántate, like, clean, right? Like, that makes me feel better. And it's like, well, no, it goes deeper than that, right? There's literally that chemical kind of imbalance that can be happening. There's kind of those societal things that, like, can be kind of affecting you. So it's like, there are other pressures that can be happening that are going to kind of trigger someone into that kind of, like, sad girl or that sadness.
Yeah. And I think, I don't know, I think, like, going back to, like, being in survival mode, I think, I mean, coming from, like, a family with immigrant parents, right? I think it's hard. It's like, it's hard to understand them because you're like, you can, like, feel for them, but at the same time you're like, it's your experience, right? And you're trying to understand both. But I think it's being able to understand that, like, a lot of the time our parents are literally still trying to survive, you know, and that doesn't necessarily change because they are in a safe home. It's literally like they are in flight or fight the entire time, you know. And for parents, or for, I guess, older generations, the way that they've coped is literally, like, going to work because they had to, right? Having two jobs because they had to. Mm-hmm. And it's not a matter of, like, can I do it? It's I literally have to help my family survive, right? So it's this learned way of coping with what you're feeling and not having to feel it because you're just having your attention to what your responsibilities are, right? And so from, like, a parent's perspective or, like, older generations, like, it's a privilege to not have to go to work. It's a privilege to say you're feeling sad, right? But, like, is it though? Because, yeah, like, I don't have to work two jobs, but, like to a teenager, to someone who's young and experiencing that, like their world is literally crashing because of grades, because of bullying, because of boyfriend, girlfriend, right? Like that is their entire world. So telling them something like, no tienes que trabajar, like what are you stressed about? Like they don't understand, mm-hmm. right? Just the way parents might not understand kids, right? And so like to me, I feel like having conversations is the way that you debunk that, right? Like with parents and not coming from a place of like teaching them, because I think in working with parents, Sasha and I have kind of learned that like you can't just like teach them, right? Like I think it's about learning where they're coming from and like using whatever their experiences are to put things into perspective, right? So one thing that I think like is like a good comparison when like especially working with kids that are like about to go to college, right? Like that first gen struggles that a lot of the times like our parents do so much to support us but don't quite understand like what the stress is about. And you know, like coming from parents that might have immigrated at a very young age, like that is an insane level of stress, I can imagine, right? And so even though going to college might not be the same stress, it's still embarking on something new, right? So being able to like support them and understanding based on their experiences and putting things into perspective, right? But I think that's part of why Homegirl Consejos is like really special to us, because it's not just for like adults, it could be for teenagers, it could be for moms, right? And like having these conversations in a way that is like relatable and not like sitting in an office learning how to like cope, right? It's a little mm-hmm. bit more like we're bringing it to community and like catering it to a way that we all understand.
Yeah, I think we've definitely even had like mother daughters show up to our workshops and then them kind of like having that experience together, or even like after the fact, like having, you know, attendees come up to us and like saying, have you thought about doing this for like moms?
Yeah, like because, they've requested like a mom daughter type of workshop,
because I think it hits home, because a lot of the times we are covering these things where it's like recognizing like we can be understanding of our parents' struggle, right? Understanding of where they're coming from, because like Miriam said, it is a privilege to learn these things, right? It is a privilege to learn, you know, emotional maturity, to have that emotional intelligence. So it's like recognizing that sometimes like a parent's bandwidth isn't there, not obviously excusing some of these behaviors, but recognizing, hey, like what are those limitations and how can we try to kind of work with them to like have them try at least to understand it to some degree for themselves.
Yeah, I feel like there's something really interesting here. Like parents, grandparents obviously have had tremendous struggle or not, you know, depending mm-hmm. on your family and where you're coming from and your history. But there's something like about, you know, back in our like our my mom went to USC and she did all her papers on a typewriter. Like they were literally using typewriters at USC, right, when my mom was in school. And I feel like back in the day, you're not connected to the internet and you're not seeing every horrible thing that has ever happened, like in the world,
yeah.
mm-hmm. you know, all at once. So maybe there was this perspective where back in the day, your problems were the world and those were all the problems is what's happening right here.
Yeah.
You know, and then like us, we're so inundated with every catastrophe and massacre and horrible yeah. thing. And I think we also are in an era where we each feel a sense of responsibility to act
yeah.
and to help with those things. So it's like we're not just coping with our own realities yeah. and what we see and live with. It's like so much in our minds.
Yeah.
Because of
yeah.
what we take in, it seems so much bigger. I don't know, maybe that's why we're so sad.
No, for sure.
That makes a lot of sense. You know? No, because yeah, we are literally in an age where social media is our form of like information, right? We like think TikTok, you are gaining like information in such a like short span of time, like a 60-second video, and it's like all this bad news in 60 seconds, right? Where it's like, and you're just swiping and swiping and swiping. That's kind of like what your feed is. So it's like, yeah, there's almost like this existential like dread that can mm-hmm. kind of be coming over you, because you're like, look at everything that's kind of happening. The world is on fire, right? Mm-hmm. So it's like all of those factors kind of like amounted onto one person on top of my day to day, right? Mm-hmm. Like what are my struggles day to day? And I think also too, adding the layers of like, the like oppressive kind of systems that are also affecting these people, right? So thinking about the communities that we work in, right? Obviously the predominantly Latino, a lot of them like first gen or just like immigrated over here. So it's like there's so many kind of like compounding factors. It's like, of course these kids are going to feel this way, or of course we're going to be feeling this way. There's so much kind of happening at once.
I want to ask you both about TikTok specifically, like not trying to be an old head, like not trying to show my age. I have a TikTok account. I watch TikToks like the rest of us. I do. I'm also, though, like super cautious and mindful of the mental health information that's shared on there specifically. I've seen like terms used that don't apply. I'm not a therapist either, right? But I'm a therapy user, and I'm sometimes questioning like, is that accurate? Should you be using that? Should we be calling everything gaslighting?
Right.
Should we be calling everything
trauma,
mm-hmm. trauma dumping, mm-hmm. like all those different therapy words, right?
Yeah.
And I don't know if they're always used correctly by the right people. So I'm curious, like, and y'all as professionals, how you navigate that, how you navigate maybe clients bringing you like a TikTok diagnosis or something, right? Like, how are you navigating all of that?
Yeah, I think it's like, I love TikTok because like there's great information, but then there's not the best information, because I feel like the same thing. I'm on TikTok, like I'm on the mental health side of TikTok, and how there's just so many people who are assigning this like mental health expert to themselves without actually having that like educational background, right? Where it's like, yeah, lived experience is important, but you also aren't kind of like equipped to be sharing these things. And that's when like there's a lot of misinformation. But I think also too, because mental health is such a prevalent topic right now, everyone is learning the language, right? I hear gaslight all the time, right? Mm-hmm. Trauma dumping, trauma bonding, right? So it's like all these words are getting tossed around when it's like, wait, we're like misusing it, right? And I think again, it's kind of like that over-identification that's happening also. Like, I'm glad to hear people are having mental health conversations, but also being mindful of like the definitions and like the words that we are using, because yeah, sometimes I'm hearing things and I'm like, that's not what that means. Or like the whole kind of thing with like boundaries, right? Where it's like, that's not a boundary, right? Like that's a demand, right? So like understanding these things and thinking about like how sometimes mental health language can be kind of like weaponized in some ways, where it's like, that's not what its purpose is for, but that's kind of where it's starting to kind of like snowball into, which I'm recognizing, where it's like, oh, now we're kind of giving this language to people where it's like, now they're misusing it or kind of using it and not in a way that it's intended.
It's almost, and I hate to say this, but it's almost like too accessible, you know, because the access to therapy still isn't there, but the language is what's too accessible.
I think that's the issue, right? Because I feel like if the accessibility was there, then like you could have these conversations after with your therapist, right? And I was kind of late to TikTok. Like I was very resistant, and then I joined. But I think surprisingly, I'm not on mental health TikTok, and maybe it was because I was late and I just haven't gotten there. But like, everyone has ADHD at this point.
Yeah.
You know, like we have all self-diagnosed with ADHD. And even in my own sessions, like I have so many clients that are like, I think I have ADHD, right? And then it's like, okay, tell me why. But the reality is that so many diagnoses like overlap, you know, and one thing or like symptoms can like across the board seem similar, right? But the root of it is specific to you and your experiences. Mm-hmm. And I think like you wouldn't be able to do that work outside of therapy, you know, which I think it's great to have these conversations and bring awareness. But then like, now what, you know?
It reminds me of this term that has been so huge in POC communities online. And this is, now it's escaping me. When you're imposter syndrome.
Yeah, everybody had imposter syndrome.
Everyone who's ever gone to college or any type of higher ed has felt like an imposter, I guess. And but what's fascinating is that it's tied with this word syndrome.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And like a syndrome is a thing, but you have to be diagnosed with a syndrome. Mm-hmm. Is imposter syndrome an actual syndrome, or is it just a thing that we say? You know what I mean?
It is.
But we don't like diagnose that, you know, within like the DSM, within our practice, right? And it's funny because we actually had a workshop with that, and part of that workshop is like, why is it not okay to just self-label as having imposter syndrome, right? Because that's too easy. It takes so much responsibility away from what's happening in the world and around you. And it's not just on the person.
Yeah.
You know, and not everyone has it.
Exactly. It's like taking away that, like, oh, this is an individual problem. And I think that's like what we talked on. It's like, it's also looking at like the societal kind of like constructs that are like creating that feeling, right? Mm-hmm. So this is like the imposter syndrome is a lot of the times like in these big transitions of like going to higher ed, right? Uh-huh. Going to college, landing that job, right? Where it's like a lot of the times these are spaces that maybe as POC individuals like are entering, it's like that's not, you know, historically a space that they are kind of supposed to be in or were allowed to be in, right? So it's like that's kind of where that it's like a construct that is created, but it's like forced to have it be, oh, but that's you. Like, right, that's how you're feeling. When it's like, no, no, no.
Yeah. It's like, no, I don't have a syndrome. I'm just noticing.
Yeah.
That, or I'm nervous.
Yeah.
Right.
Because I'm the only woman in here.
Exactly.
Or whatever.
Or there's racism in the office. Mm-hmm. Or there's microaggressions. Right. Like, that's totally different than like, I have imposter syndrome.
Absolutely. I remember when I was either applying to grad school or I was already in grad school and I had a session with my therapist and I raised that concern to her. I said something like, I don't know if I'm feeling imposter syndrome or XYZ. And she goes, maybe you're just nervous. Like, why does it have to be imposter syndrome? Mm-hmm. And I was like, you're right. And that's like she and Mala and I have started having this conversation amongst ourselves for several years now. Like, is it imposter syndrome or is it just that we're the first ones in the room? Mm-hmm. That's the problem. It's not us. We didn't do anything. Again, going back to what you said, Sasha, it's the systems in place that have created the structure where you're the only, maybe you're the first or the only one.
Exactly. Yeah. And it's, I think that's kind of like, I think we said like, that's the form of gaslighting, right? We're like, we're entering these spaces and it's like made to make me feel like I'm the one when it's like, no, like this is just everything around me that's kind of creating me to feel this way.
An imposter.
Right. Imposter, exactly.
So, I mean, but keeping up with that conversation of like over-identifying and maybe self-diagnosing, like what advice would you give to listeners that want to follow mental health content and want to keep up with it? How can they stay like mentally healthy while also like viewing all of this content?
Yeah, I think it's also like recognizing like what type of content you're taking in, right? Because I think there's like the mental health content where it's like you're gaining it from kind of like licensed professionals, right, who are taught to kind of know how to like, you know, diagnose these things versus going with a person who is just kind of going off of like their own lived experience, right? There's like differences. Not to say that like the lived experience, like I said, isn't important, but more so like recognizing that like we want to get information that's coming from a source that we know kind of is, it's valid or backed, right? So, but also limiting kind of like that, so maybe sometimes that's sad girl content, right? Because one thing that always kind of pops into my mind is like nowadays seeing a lot of people posting themselves like crying, right? Or posting
on TikTok.
These videos of like, it's just like, just overall sadness, right? And it's like, if you are allowing the algorithm to like feed that to you, it's going to impact, right? Like how you're feeling. Because now you're thinking, oh my God, everyone else is sad and I'm sad too, right? So I think it's like trying to find that balance within yourself of like, okay, I want to kind of continue to gain this mental health like understanding, but recognizing what kind of sources I'm going to, but then also like balancing that with like community of like what communities can I tap into that are empowering and encouraging me to like recognize my mental health, but also like do the work to kind of like get myself to a place where I feel good and happy.
Yeah. And I kind of think too, it's like the way that we wouldn't like Google like medical issues.
WebMD.
Like you don't want to do that for like mental health stuff too, right? And I think it goes the same as like doing an IG search or a TikTok, right? I think that is equivalent to what Google searching is. And although like you can have good information, like it's not that it's not accurate, but it's not catered to you, you know? So even though like, yeah, finding a professional online might be better than not, the information that like even we put out with Homegirl Consejos, like it's not necessarily everyone's experience, you know, like our workshops, even though we are there having conversations with them, it's not everyone's experiences. And so I think just being careful about that, because even when we meet with girls at our workshops, like we're pretty clear in saying like this isn't therapy.
Right.
And if you do feel like you need further support, like meet up with us after. Right. And I know that it's difficult because like we talk about how mental health is important, but the reality is that it's not as accessible as it needs to be. So I think just also finding different ways, like she said, to connect with community, whether that is with a counselor, right? Even though like services might not always be available like long term, finding centers that can offer like either short term support or groups, right? Mm-hmm. Like that's a really good way to kind of have support in a way that like is feels legitimate and you're feeling you feel like you're actually in a group where you're being validated and supported too.
I love that. Tell me more about the workshops that y'all have hosted and hope to host in the future.
So a lot of the workshops that we've done are what we feel like are the basic mental health 101, you know, like little starter kits through like for people who are interested in learning more about mental health, who maybe want to like embark on a journey of like self-healing, working on themselves, or maybe are already there and they just want to continue to do that work. So the first series of workshops that we had were last year. We did like a mental health 101, and then our second one was like a self-love, which was like more so looking at within. And then the third one was healthy relationships. So like in a way that to us was like the basic starter kit, right?
Because like the foundation.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I think we really love that because I felt like, you know, everyone can relate to that. Whatever your experiences are, wherever you're at in your healing journey, it's very relatable. And I think it's a good place to start. And then our second round of workshops really kind of were about like leveling up and like how do you kind of move forward if you are already doing this work. So I don't know if Sasha wants to add a little bit more about that.
Yeah. So we actually did a whole workshop on imposter syndrome and like learning how to kind of combat that and like that internalized like, oh, this is like the me problem like that we talked about. And then kind of like really trying to kind of build on those foundation pieces of like, okay, now that I'm kind of at this place where I'm ready to heal, like what are those skills that I can implement within myself or around me or tapping into community to help me kind of continue with like the growth. So I think for us, like we are wanting these workshops to obviously be as accessible to like community members, but also utilizing language that doesn't feel too kind of like jarring, right? Like Median said, we don't want it to be clinical. We want to use words that feel like more like understanding, like where people can kind of create those connections and then from there move on to like, hey, maybe I am needing to go into individual therapy, or maybe, hey, group therapy is where I need to be at right now. So I think we definitely are wanting to expand it to be more. I know we've had talks about wanting to do school kind of workshops to kind of like let it kind of come out to like high schools, middle schools, because I feel like there is a really big need in like teaching like the younger generation on like mental health. They're already kind of doing an amazing job on like understanding it, but kind of really giving them the like knowledge and the language so that they can kind of like do that work themselves or begin to start to try to do that work.
Beautiful. And where can our listeners keep up with you and follow you and maybe catch a future workshop?
So we're on Instagram right now, Homegirl Consejos, and we are hoping to continue more virtual workshops because we do get just girls around that are not necessarily from California that are interested in just having these conversations. And one of the workshops that we did was like a virtual one, and it was intended to be like a 1 hour like check-in, coping skills, how are we doing? And that turned out to be like an over 2 hour thing. So we do envision like Homegirl Consejos to also be like a way of having like a support system and a network. Mm-hmm. Ideally, we want to kind of create like an accountability community where everyone's doing their own stuff, right? And maybe you don't necessarily need therapy right now, or maybe you are doing your own therapy, but this is just another like way where you can find people that are interested in supporting each other from afar and just like celebrating your wins as well. Mm-hmm. So yeah, we are on Instagram for now, and I think that is where we're primarily really like creating this community. And I think it's great because whenever we like post just how are people doing, check-ins, right, I think it's like the DMs are flooding because
they
like
really
the sad girls are not okay.
Yeah.
The sad girls are sadding.
I knew
honestly,
it. Poor babies.
Sometimes it's like, checking in, how's everybody doing? And then it's like 20, like, girl, I'm going through it. And I'm like, girl, me too.
Yeah. The reality is that, like, we are definitely going through it a lot of the times, right? So we're still trying to figure out how to, like, continue having momentum with Homegirl Consejos. But, yeah, whenever we do, like, kind of check back in, everyone's like, girl, I'm not okay either.
Yeah.
You know? Aww. So I think Homegirl Consejos is kind of, like, support for us, too, you know?
Yeah, because it's like a parallel process.
It is. Like, a lot of the workshops we do, we're like, damn, I should be doing this.
Like, should I be sitting in the crowd or should I be presenting?
For sure.
I love that's been like our experience también.
Yeah. I mean, it's very real. I mean, you know, therapists and service providers across the board are human beings. And I also think that probably makes you guys even better at what you do is like your ability to acknowledge like we go through things too.
Exactly.
You know, like there's that human element there.
Yeah.
Which I think is important for listeners to hear too. You know, like you guys are like not like the therapist that you see in like tweed jackets and a monocle,
exactly.
You know, like.
And I am not afraid to admit that, like, and I always tell people, you know, like I have been in therapy for like 3 years now.
Yeah.
And I'm like,
I just started therapy again today.
If she's hearing this, please don't ever break up with me. It is a parallel process, you know, and I think like just the way that like people learn from some of the conversations we have, I think we're continuing to learn from our community.
Yeah.
And that makes us better at our job too, mm-hmm. you know? Just because I think in therapy, even though like it shouldn't be this way, like I think there's always this like power dynamic mm-hmm. in the room that like if the therapist is not conscious of it or like intentionally trying to like dismantle that, it's gonna be there. You
exactly.
know, and I think that's what I really love about, like, our workshops is that, like, it's very much discussion-based. Like, at first we had our first workshop, like, the chairs were, like, facing us, and, like, we hated that. Like, we're like, no, this is not going to work. Mm-hmm. You know, it felt like people were just, like, in a lecture. And so after that, we started kind of, like, facing the chairs in, like, doing more, like,
groups,
mm-hmm. right? And that, like, it was crazy what that did to the, like, dynamic in the room.
Yeah.
You know? So just little things like that I think like it just allows for better conversations and for people to open up more.
Exactly.
I love that. Well, thank you so much, Homegirl Consejos, Sasha and Miriam, for joining us. You're always welcome at Locatora Radio. We've loved having you.
Thank you.
And this has been another episode. Thank you for tuning in.
Thank
Besitos.
You.
Besitos.
Besitos. Thank you.
Locatora Radio, a radiophonic novela, is executive produced and hosted by me, Mala Munoz, and Diosa Femme.
Story editing by me, Diosa.
Audio editing by Stephanie Franco.
Thank you to our locamores, our listeners, for all of your support.
Besitos! Locatora Radio, a radiophonic novela.
Hosted by Mala Munoz
and Diosa Femme.
Network. Thank you for traveling with Amex Platinum. To your right, you'll see Oceanside Relaxation at a fine hotel and resort property. When booked through Amex Travel, you can enjoy complimentary breakfast for 2 and 4 p.m. late checkout. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
What the world needs now is positivity. Connecting, relating, and being human together is where it's at. Hi there, Honey German, and I know life happens, but trust, you got this. And State Farm got us. It feels good knowing that State Farm agents are there to help you choose the right coverage with great support 24/7. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Live Nation presents Concert Week. Now through May 14th, get $25 tickets to over 5,000 shows. That's up to 75% off a summer full of your favorite artists, like 21 Savage, Alanis Morissette, Cage the Elephant, Celeste Barber, Dierks Bentley, Fade, Hootie and the Blowfish, Janet Jackson, Kidz Bop Kids, Meghan Trainor, Pistol Pluma, Sarah McLachlan. Get tickets to more than 5,000 summer shows for just $25. Until now through May 14th. Visit LiveNation.com/concertweek to learn more and plan your summer with Sean Paul, Sum 41, 30 Seconds to Mars, oh, and Two Door Cinema Club.